We're back with another episode of Lions Collective. I'm your host, Jeff Iafredi. Alongside me, we got Justin Rogers, Detroit Football Network, Colton Pouncey from The Athletic, and Will Birchfield from 97.1 The Ticket. It's the Detroit Lions offseason. Things are happening, OTAs, which Dan Campbell said it's pajamas. It's a pajama party, but I'm still a sicko, and I'm still following every single thing that happens, no matter how insignificant it seems. It's that time of the year. Before we start, I want to give a big shout-out to our sponsors, Dog and Pony Show Brewing, which you can see right there, which we're going to go hang out after the show and go check out. Go see our guy Kyle. Mention Lions Collective. Get a dollar off your beer. But also Prize Picks, another sponsor of the show. But how are we doing, fellas? We're all back. Colton's back from vacation. Nice to have you, Colton. Hope you had a blast, my friend. But it's good to be back with the boys, man.
Bro, Colton's back from the world's longest bachelor party in human history.
I heard you say that last week when I watched the episode, and I'm like, okay, technically the trip was Thursday to Sunday. I just tacked on a day on the front end and the back end for my own personal enjoyment. I had a great time. So, ate some good food, a lot of culture and art in that city, so really enjoyed it. I could not deal with the humidity. Oh, my goodness, that kicked my ass. But
yeah,
could be back in the Midwest. I like it here.
I feel like if you go to New Orleans anytime after May, you're taking three showers a day if you're spending any time outside. But
literally,
Colton crushed our group chat last night with a bunch of food picks, and I needed a shower after that. I'm going to be honest.
I needed a cigarette.
Justin's the foodie of the group, so I had to send him some material.
Oh,
you send out the chef too? The best.
I should have. Yeah, honestly, I should have asked for some racks before I went. No doubt. Yeah.
It's good to have Colton back, man. The vibes are back, and we have a lot to cover today. The Myles Garrett stuff. It took my vibes away. I'm not gonna lie to you guys. I'm very honest with you guys. Okay, took the vibes away from me. We're back. Okay, had to get myself ready for Wednesday, but we got the Myles Garrett stuff. Chris Greer, kind of what his role means. I know people probably aren't completely clear on what that exactly means. We'll get later into the show. We'll talk bold predictions, and then we'll of course start with kind of the OTAs, but. What are some things that you guys are kind of looking for? I know it's OTA, so nothing really is it's hard to look at things and say, okay, that's significant. But just the vibe around Allen Park, Dan Campbell kind of talking about the mentality they're kind of approaching or he's approaching OTAs with. Is there anything that kind of stuck out to you so far just about the team, the team chemistry, Dan Campbell, anything in specific for you guys?
I really wanted to see kind of how the top of the defensive back depth chart would roll out with, you know, presumably Branch and Kirby Joseph out for these sessions and Branch probably out to midseason. And, the first reps at safety went to Chuck Clark and Christian Izian. And it was a little interesting to me. I thought those two might be competing for one job, that job being Branch's job. You know, Chuck Clark was a guy I highlighted as maybe a potential stopgap target way back in February, just because he gives off kind of Branch vibes with his usage, his strengths on the field. Izian being in that free safety role, that's those snaps he played in Tampa were, I think, 23-24% of his career snaps have been in as a free safety. Clearly the Lions see something in his skill set from what they saw on tape, from what they saw in the matchups they played against him. Had a pick, obviously, on Jared Goff in one of those games. And so, I'm cautious, obviously, being where we are in the offseason. You know, last year Maddox was supposed to be the nickel and ended up being a free safety, and they were out there throwing, you know, Rocky Sin out at safety for a bit there. So, you know, what we're seeing in late May and early June is not necessarily indicative of what we'll see, you know, by the end of training camp or week one. But certainly interesting to see Izian out there. But I will say, with the Kirby Joseph front, you know, I was encouraged, I think, with what little we did see of him. He was there. He was on the sidelines, no brace on the knee, seemed in very good spirits, was participating in leading a drill like a coach, was catching some balls after practice. And so, you know, it's really tough to read the tea leaves there. But, I guess there was nothing more negative picked up on the Kirby Joseph front this week.
Yeah, my eyes went right to the right tackle spot because I had a beer hanging in the balance with J-Raj.
And yeah.
Miller taking that first starting rep. He had Larry Borum. It was none other than Larry Borum taking that first rep at right tackle. But I will say, I think over the course of 11-on-11 jog through / walk through, it ended up being more Blake Miller. So I think it's safe to say that they view him as the starter. But as far as the bet is concerned, I'll be paying that off tonight at Dog and Bony Show Brewery. J-Raj takes that one for sure. I was kind of watching the reserve rotation with the offensive line, and obviously no Ben Bartsch out there yet, and he'll end up being a pretty big piece of this conversation as training camp unfolds with Bartsch coming off a foot injury. But, you know, we saw Miles Frazier, who's another sort of mystery piece, lining up even in some jumbo tight end sets, and I believe they had Larry Borum doing the same thing here and there. So, you know, the Lions already are experimenting and maybe having some fun with the depth at offensive line that they did not have last year. And then, look, we're going to get a pretty good look at the corners behind Terrion in OTAs and hopefully into camp. Like Ennis Rakestraw, who has changed numbers for the third time in 3 years and is impossible for me to identify.
What is his number now?
Yeah, he's number two now.
Okay. I think that was
He was in coverage on a play in 7-on-7s last week, and I was like, who is that? Oh. And then someone said it's Ennis Rakestraw, and I said, who is that? You know, we'll get a better look at him. And they really do view him as an outside corner. Obviously, a lot of the focus in training camp, I think, defensively is going to be who ends up winning that nickel job. And there would be a case for it to be Rakestraw based on sort of his skill set and physical profile. But the Lions definitely prefer him outside. And we can get into the nickel conversation here in a little bit. But Colton, you can jump in here. I know you weren't there last week, but maybe you were watching it from afar. What jumped out to you?
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously I wasn't at practice, but I was listening into some of the press conferences on YouTube and just reading the transcripts. And, like, I guess I'll start with Dan. Because we know, I think we've talked about this like throughout the offseason, that like he's got more of this like hyper focused approach into like how he wants to go about these practices this offseason. And to me, like, you know, a couple of funny quotes to me just reading it out loud, but it's, you know, just going through the transcript, he's like, yeah, there's been a lot of guys that have done really well for 2 days in pajamas. And then like 2 seconds later, he goes, I'm done with the hype of the pajama party in May. And then later, I think he was asked about Levi. He goes, I'm not hyping anybody up, not in May. It's not worth it. And so, like, you know, I think one thing I've noticed from Dan is, like, sometimes he uses these press conferences to, like, send a indirect message or maybe a direct message to some of his players because he knows that it might get back to them in some way. And so with him setting the tone this way and just saying, like, hey, you're not getting anything out of me. Like, in past years, we've gotten J-Mo looks really good. He's gonna break out. You know, this guy's on the rise. We've heard stuff like that from Dan in the past. The fact that he's not giving any of that away in May and June this time around, kind of matches like the vibe from the schedule release. Like, hey, here it is. You know, we'll see you guys in September. That's kind of what it feels like for this group in particular. So I think we kind of knew some of that from Dan, but hearing it from some of the players, I think, you know, Saint was asked about kind of that same mentality. And he said, I thought this was really insightful. He said, when you win a lot of games, it's not that you become numb to it, but you can kind of become numb to losing as you can winning. I feel like we've won so many games these past 3-4 years, whatever it was, that you feel like you could just keep getting by with what you were doing. And he said, at the end of the day, the target only gets bigger on your back as you keep winning games. Teams know you're a good team. They want to beat you. They want to come to Ford Field and beat you. And that's not changing. Teams still know what we are and what we can do. So I think for us, we're motivated. We know what we got to do to get back. I think we got the right guys to do it. So it did feel like to me at times as they were kind of going through those late year struggles, you get to November, you're winning and losing and winning and losing, kind of alternating before that 3-game side in December. It felt like at times the Lions were just kind of like relying on their talent. And, you know, when you hear Dan say, we want to get back to what we did in 21, 22, those teams weren't talented. They could not rely on their talent. So they had to fight and they had to scrap for everything they got. And there was only three wins in that first year. And they scratched and clawed their way to almost a playoff appearance in 2022, winning 8 of those final 10 games. And so I think he wants to get back to that mentality. If you can find a way to recreate that those early year mentalities that those teams had and combine it with the talent that you have now, you can get something really special. And so while I like what the Lions have done to address the holes on the roster, Dan really felt like, hey, I need to put it upon myself to reinstill this mindset that we had in those early years. So I think when you hear him say, we got to get back to some of the things we did early on, that's what he's talking about. And this was a way of him further setting the tone to make that happen in 2026.
And I think the other thing there, Colton, just because you've been kind of on the narrative, I guess, all off season was the competition, right?
Yep.
And Dan dropped that kind of late in the press conference saying that I think, and I'm putting in, you know, my thoughts here, most high level competition we're going to have in my tenure here, right? Like,
yeah,
I think they're really happy with how they've set up some of these battles for whether it's backup roles or starting roles, that they've got guys that are going to push, you know, the contributors to that next level in place.
Absolutely.
Yeah. If we rewind a year ago, were there any legitimate starting position battles in training camp? Basically every spot on the roster was penciled in and decided entering camp. I mean, sure, Tate moved from center to right guard. Once he made that move, he was going to start at right guard. Once Mahogany was plugged in at left guard, that was the answer there. And I don't know if anywhere else on the roster they had any question marks. And you know, I think over the course of the season, that actually might have been a detriment, and that there weren't battles over the course of the season to find out who's gonna win a job. And there are now. I mean, there are definitely a battle at left guard. I like that they're gonna make Blake Miller win the job at right tackle. It was funny, after practice, he had a little scrum because a bunch of reporters kind of descended on him at once. And one of the things I asked him was, have you ever not been a starter in your football career? And he was like, well, yeah, my first year at Clemson. I was like, shut up, dude. Your first year at Clemson, sure. Maybe by nature of being a freshman, you weren't a rookie on day one. You were a starter by day two. And it does feel like that's going to play itself out again here. But there are definitely jobs to be won. And I think that the biggest one, to reiterate from my first comments, is at nickel. And you know, I think this is worth getting into a little bit, because a lot of us have fixated on the defensive scheme that Shep ran last year and sort of the obsession with base defense. And, you know, he made some comments last night when he hopped on the Sports Office, actually here at Fox 2, in response to a question from a fan about, you know, sort of adapting the defense in 2026, that he spent some time this offseason pulling the top five defenses from last year. I believe he was referring to the top five defenses just in points allowed, and trying to identify trends that connected those defenses and concepts the Lions could apply based on the personnel that they have. And earlier in that interview, you know, he was talking about some of the newcomers to the secondary and some of the new faces there. And he pivoted sort of mid-answer to the nickel position. And what he said about the nickel position, which I think probably pleased a lot of fans when they heard it, is that, you know, it's a critical position within the defense, and we want to expand upon the volume with which we use the nickel. And then he said, and who's that going to be? And obviously, you know, we've talked about this ad nauseum this offseason. The Lions played nickel at one of the lowest rates in the NFL last season, played base at by far the highest rate. I think one thing that might go overlooked in that conversation is that it was partly out of necessity. Obviously, the fact that they love their trio of linebackers was the main reason for that deployment. But also, they didn't really have anyone to play nickel as the season went on. Like, they lost DJ Reed for a long stretch, then they lost Terrion for the season in, what, like week 8 or week 9. So they had to balance Amik outside, who was going to be their starting nickel. And in the meantime, they also had to balance Rock Ya-Sin outside for a little bit. And then when they lost both of their safeties, they had to move Avante Maddox to play some safety, and he was probably the other most likely player to step in and play nickel capably. And a Strakestraw, who might have had a shot to play nickel last year, was obviously down for the year. So even if Shep had wanted to use more nickel, I don't know if they had anyone else left on the roster who was a viable candidate to play that role. And they do now. They have a lot of good candidates. And the one that Shep mentioned, maybe countering Campbell's suggestion to avoid the hype of pajama parties, was Roger McCreary. He said he's one guy that has popped so far. Obviously, Keith Abney is someone that has huge potential there. The Lions view him as a nickel, and I think, J-Rod, you and I agreed that he might seize that role pretty early in the season. The dark horse to me is Izzian, just based on how well he played in the slot and at nickel with the Bucs in his first season. When he's close to the ball and line of scrimmage, he can be pretty impactful just with some of his burst and closing speed. But McCreary is interesting for this reason. The last time he played significant snaps in the slot, he finished Second on the Titans in tackles for loss, and he was first in the NFL in tackles for loss among defensive backs. And this was in 2024, so just 2 years ago. And when I talked to him when he was introduced here about a month or so ago, I caught up with him for like a little one-on-one, just for like a video segment. And I was asking him just like what he takes most pride in on the football field. And he said, you know, he doesn't really consider himself just a coverage guy. He said he likes to be quick to the ball behind the line of scrimmage. And then he pointed out to me that he had all these tackles for loss in 2024. And he said those are the plays that he looks to the most. He said, you know, I feel like what shines the most with my size is the aggressiveness, setting the edge, tackling, being there, filling the gaps, disrupting the ball. I feel like that's my playing style. And that's something the Lions definitely lacked last year against the run. So it's not surprising to me, based on McCreary's track record and those comments, that even through, you know, a week or two of OTAs, he is someone that has caught Kelvin Shepard's eye. He's just got a knack for playing in the backfield. And the Lions definitely need more of that out of that nickel spot, assuming they play more of it in 2026.
I think you're going to see a varied, you know, group of guys playing nickel, right? Like, I don't know if it's just going to be Roger McCreary or Keith Abney. I think part of the reason you brought in some of these safeties, you know, with their coverage ability, is you might see a Christian Azian or a Chuck Clark out there for different segments. Chuck Clark's a really good, you know, run defender and a guy that can make plays in the backfield. And so, you know, I think we might see a little bit more mix and match this offseason, just another way to kind of keep opposing offenses off balance.
I feel like we had this conversation in like January about maybe them playing some more nickel. And then Shep talked to us in February and was like, well, I'd love to play nickel like the Seahawks do, but I can't because I don't have like a freak playing nickel for me. That's basically a linebacker. And he mentioned at the time, it was kind of like, I'm not going to do what other teams are doing. So I'm not saying he's saying that now, because you still got to find your own identity. I think he made sure to make that point while he was speaking last night. But, you know, looking at the top five defenses from last year in terms of points per game, you have the Seahawks 1, Texans 2, Broncos 3, Patriots 4, Eagles 5th. And if you're looking at the top six nickel rates in the NFL last year, you have the Seahawks 2nd, you have the Eagles 3rd, you've got the Texans 5th, and you have the Patriots 6th. So four of the top five scoring defenses from last year were also for the top six defenses in terms of nickel rate last year as well. So that's probably something that Shep discovered during his self-scout and during the scout of these defenses as well, as he's going through this offseason process. So if that was his determination, like, I need to go find a way to incorporate more nickel usage into our defense, I do feel like they have the personnel to run that this year in ways that they didn't, as Bertie mentioned, last year. So I like some of the moves they made. I think Izian, if they put him at nickel, could be a good player. I think McCreary, as Shep mentioned last night, you know, seems to really like him. But Abney too, man, he's an exciting player. So like, he reminds me of Brian Branch in some ways. So if you can find a way to let those guys battle it out and say, man, the best man win, I think your defense can be better for it. And you can mix and match a little bit if you want. So if that was the declaration, I guess, from this offseason scouting process of the defense, I kind of like where they ended up with it.
Yeah, and this might be an oversimplification, but I, you know, just from an overhead perspective, if they do want to mix and match at nickel, it would seem to me that like Abney is probably the most capable cover guy of those three in the slot, and that maybe McCreary and Izian are the better defenders against the run. I know, J-Rod, you had raised some concerns about Abney's tackling in space, but I don't, and maybe even Izian's too, but I see a pretty solid tackler in Izian, and certainly McCreary's tape and statistics speak for themselves. So maybe the divide is cut that way.
I think, you know, we can't just say, right, nickel rate. It's the guys playing nickel for those squads too, right? I mean, you've got the freak in Seattle, as we like to call him, as Shep likes to call him. You got Moose Jones in New England. You got Cooper DeJean in Philadelphia, and Jaquan McMillan in Denver. I mean, those are really, really good players. And so, you know, you don't want to chase trends, but nickel defense has been a trend that's been growing in the NFL for over a decade now. So it just speaks to the value of that position. And I think the Lions have recognized that at different points. At one point, they made Justin Coleman the highest paid nickel in football. And yeah, that didn't work out the way I think they wanted it to, but you know, there's a reason they still paid Amik Robertson to come here after acquiring Carlton Davis. Like, I think they recognize the value. They just haven't had the right one, or the situational, the injury situation to kind of really deploy it the way they've wanted to. I did want to bring up one more point before we move off the OTAs, and just because Will kind of brought up the offensive line rotation, unless I blacked out, Will, which is possible. Did you mention Gio?
No, I did not.
All right. Well, look, big fella is now number four on the OT depth chart at best. And with Ben Bartsch, not practicing, as he's still, coming off his own season ending injury, little guard work for, Gio Manu. And so, I will be curious where that develops. Look, I think he's going to have some just natural leverage issues, given his height. I mean, you've got to get low against some of those interior defensive pass rushers, or they'll bowl you right into the pocket. But he has so many other physical gifts that I think can be accentuated by playing inside, and also maybe some of his weaknesses that can be hidden by moving inside. So I think clearly this is a make or break offseason for Gio. I'm curious to see kind of how the interior, he did both tackle and guard, but I'm curious to see how the interior stuff develops, because Dan brought that up, what, February 25 as a possibility. And so I think this is really the first time we've kind of seen any of that.
I think we're going the wrong direction. He's moving inside, move him outside, put him at tight end, shed some weight, see if he can catch some passes. That's what I want to see.
I do want to get to this, the Myles Garrett stuff, because, you know, maybe we can use this as like a, this is good. This is good for our show, because it's like an exercise. You guys are level headed. Okay. So I'll be the guy in the show that's, not a little more stressed out, panicky. And you guys can talk to me as if I'm some of the fans that are panicking right now. And it has nothing to do necessarily with, like, should the Lions have traded for Myles Garrett? Cause even I, like, that was never going to happen. Okay. So I just want to make that clear. It's not my stance on it. But a Super Bowl favorite that decided to get the best player on planet Earth. What has kind of been your guys' reaction? For those who maybe have been living under a rock, he was traded for Jared Verse, who is a former first-round pick, another first-rounder, and a future second and a future third. The Browns get Jared Verse and draft capital. The Rams get Myles Garrett. But what does this kind of mean for you guys just in the NFC? And not that it maybe changes much, because the Rams are the favorite. Now they're just the extra favorite, however you want to look at it. But just the differences between maybe general managers that operate like a Les Snead, who are just hyper aggressive, and you know the Howie Rosemans of the world, these other GMs compared to Brad Holmes. I think that's been the conversation the last couple of days. So where are you guys kind of on those two discussions there?
Who wants to lead this one?
I'll chime in here. So when that news came down, my brain first went to Sean McVay and Matthew Stafford, and specifically Sean McVay on draft night, when he didn't exactly seem thrilled about the choice of a developmental quarterback in the first round. And it went to Matthew Stafford for the fact that, you know, I think for a couple of years now we have sensed that he is on the verge of or approaching retirement, and it's felt like a year-to-year decision for him for a couple of years now. And while this move is fairly painted as a win now move, it also strikes me as a move that might widen the Rams window. I mean, this is the kind of move that might compel Stafford to play another year or two than he might have possibly intended, and probably compels Sean McVay, who has thought in his own time about stepping away from coaching, to continue with the Rams in his current role. And obviously it has possible implications for Aaron Donald in more of the short-term view, but it almost felt like the move that appeases is a strong word, but I'll use it, that appeases McVay and Stafford. It's the move that appeases Kelly Stafford, essentially. You know, it keeps Matthew happy, but it is a complete contrast to the way that Brad Holmes is running the Lions, which is ironic only for the fact that he came from the Les Snead school out there in LA. But the Rams have done this for a while now, and obviously bringing on a player like Myles Garrett and his salary will make it difficult for them to, you know, re-sign guys like Puka Nacua next year and Byron Young. And there's a report from Jeremy Fowler that, you know, the Rams are giving their early impression anyway that they won't re-sign those guys, Nakua, Young, even Kobe Turner, Steve Avila this summer, and that like they might have to let those guys walk in the future. And this is part of their calculus. They have done this before. And yes, while they have traded a lot of first round picks, they have also received a ton of comp picks when they have to let their own players walk after bringing in big name players from other teams. I was looking today. They have made 24 comp picks since 2017, which is the second most in the NFL. And those comp picks, while, you know, they have a pretty low hit rate based on the fact that they're mostly day three picks, have yielded Puka Nacua. They have yielded Ernest Jones and Kobe Durant, who have been solid players for the Rams. And so it's not that the Rams say F them picks entirely. They say F those first round picks, and then they make they find pretty good value in their later round picks. And I bet if you go back and look over the past 7 or 8 drafts, they've probably made close to as many total picks as anyone. And you know, they have obviously found value in the later rounds. So they are okay with the idea of letting some of their own stars walk, knowing that they're bringing in stars from elsewhere and that they will end up with more chances to find future stars with those comp picks.
It is pretty absurd that the only first round pick made by the Rams on this current Rams roster is Ty Simpson. That's like, when I read that, I was like, oh my God. I mean, it makes sense, but it's pretty ridiculous to think about. But when you compare that to the Lions and Brad Holmes's approach, I think he would have a heart attack if that were the case. because we know that he loves to build through the draft and draft and develop and re-sign his guys. And he's done that. And we all know he's done that. So I saw some like takes out there that the Lions don't make big swings and they don't like spend money, but they do. It's just on their own guys. So I don't know. I guess it's just a difference of approach. And I mean, we all know that's something new, but I don't know. Like, for everyone saying, oh, the Rams are they're gonna be so good. Like, how do you beat the Rams? I don't know. Like, you gotta lace up and play, man. Like, it's June 3rd, and we're talking about how the Rams are like a juggernaut already. It's like, you gotta let the games be played, man. I remember, what was it, the 2011 Eagles team that everyone called like a super team or the dream team, whatever they called it back then. I think they finished like 8-8 with that team that was so stacked. So didn't even make the playoffs. So I don't know. I'm not saying it's going to happen to the Rams, but again, it's just a point that you got to let these games be played before you just crown a champion. And I think 2 years ago when we were looking at the Lions and they were 15-2 and they were winning all these games, like, man, the Lions are going to be tough to beat when you get to the playoffs. But then all of a sudden they lose their first game and they're out. So you never know what can happen as the season plays out. Got to get to January and let these games be played before we crown anyone. So as dangerous as the Rams look, and would be even more dangerous if Aaron Donald decides to come out of retirement. Like, what is that talk about? That's crazy to me. Obviously, they look stacked right now, but it's June 3rd, so kind of miss me with some of that talk right now. I'm not really buying it just yet.
Myles Garrett and Aaron Donald are the two most dominant defensive players since Reggie White. And there is, I feel like, I don't think Aaron Donald makes the comments he did unless he's serious, right? And so I think there's a realistic possibility, and who knows what Aaron Donald looks like these days, but you see him still doing some crazy weightlifting in the gym. Like, there's a possibility we see those two dudes lined up side by side, and that is absolutely terrifying for everyone else. But, you know, the thing about football is not just that you've got to lace them up, but, you know, injuries are such a huge part of the game, and it's not like Matthew Stafford doesn't have this lingering back concern, or, you know, any given snap, something could happen to Myles Garrett or Puka Nacua, and you take just one of those massive superstars off the table for them, and, you know, their odds fall back to the pack really, really quickly. The thing that struck me as, you know, jumped out about this, I guess, is I quickly pulled up kind of the salary cap tables for the two teams, the Lions and the Rams, just because, you know, that's the comp. Why aren't the Lions making these swings? At the time of the trade, the Rams had 3 players averaging $20 million per season. The Lions had 8, right? They've paid so many dudes. And I know, like, in hindsight, people want to say, oh, the Kirby Joseph deal is terrible, or the Aleem McDeal deal is terrible. And they weren't terrible at the time. I mean, you could maybe argue a slight overpay for future production for Aleem McNeil, but all those deals were market rate deals. And so it's understandably not exciting for fans to just retain what you have. That's not the big shiny new toy. That's not the Buzz Lightyear, right? You're not getting the great Christmas gift, but the Rams are in a different window, right? Like they have a legitimate urgency with Stafford and extending to McVay. Like I kind of feel that they're almost a package deal heading into retirement. You know, I think when Stafford steps away, I think there's a really good chance that McVay steps away just based on some of the waffling we've heard about his future over the years. And so right now, you know, clearly the Lions haven't won a Super Bowl. They haven't been to a Super Bowl, but we've talked about this core, this foundation, right? It's locked up or they're trying to lock it up. Almost the entirety of that 10-ish players are in their prime. The one that, you know, arguably isn't in his prime, but maybe a little bit different is Jared Goff, right? Like you're still getting great career best football out of Goff, and you probably will for another 2 or 3 years. And so if you make this trade and you go all in for a Myles Garrett, right? One, you've got to trade a player of a Jared versus caliber. The best I could come up with on the Lions roster that kind of fit that mold was Jack Campbell. So you got to give up Jack Campbell. You got to give up a first rounder. You got to give up a second rounder. You got to give up a third rounder. And now you're kind of artificially shortening this window. The Lions are built not to contend for the 2026, 2027 Super Bowl. Hypothetically, the way they're constructed, they're built to contend for the next 5 Super Bowls. And what I wrote the other day is like, look, if they don't get there, if they don't win it, we're going to be talking about them the same way we talk about these Justin Verlander, Max Scherzer, Miguel Cabrera Tigers teams that were super talented, made some runs, didn't get it done. And it's one of the great disappointments in Detroit sports history. And if these Lions don't manage to get it done with this crazy array of talent where they have an elite offensive tackle, elite defensive end, elite linebacker, elite wide receiver 1 and 2, a really, really good quarterback. Like if they can't get it done, it's going to be one of the great disappointments in Detroit sports history, but it's the way they've decided to be built. It is a sound structure that has been proven to be successful through multiple organizations in NFL history. And I still contend that their foundation is the envy of most of the league. I would say at least 28 teams would trade their top 10 players for the Lions' top 10 players in a heartbeat. And so it's just up to Brad Holmes to build the other 43, right, around those 10 players, because the core just doesn't get much better.
And one thing I'll point out before we end here with the Rams, but they were a great team last year, obviously, and they look even better this year. They were the healthiest team in the NFL last season. And we know like health matters so much when you get late in season. Got to keep these guys upright if you can. But there's a stat in True Media that tracks games with participation status injured reserve. And that stat, I believe the Rams had the fewest games with that status. And that was 56 for the season. You want to guess where the Lions were at? By chance, I feel like I might have said this on this pod before, but
240,
close, a little bit higher, 270, 270, which was third in the NFL behind the Cardinals at 295 and the Dolphins at 272. So the difference there, 270 versus 56. If the Rams get that same sort of health, luck, I'll say this year, they're probably winning the Super Bowl, but it's so hard to predict year to year. It's so hard to keep that continuity going. And I will say the Rams, from what I've heard, do a good job of like taking it easy in practice. I've talked to Rams beat writers about that. So maybe it's working for them. Maybe the Lions can pull a page out of that book. But we do know they have something that works for them. And that it really helped them last year with those 56 games missed. So we'll see if they can repeat that again in 2026.
They scrapped rookie minicamp. What more do you want?
Yeah, I'm saying you never know.
Can I just say, don't diminish the size of the upgrade from Jared Verse to Myles Garrett. And this is not a knock on Jared Verse. I think some Lions fans have tried coping with this move by pointing out that Verse was already a really good defensive end. He is. He had 7.5 sacks last year. Myles Garrett had 38. He had 23. But, like, Myles Garrett had 3 times as many sacks as Jared Verse. Like, he, as J-Rod said, is one of the most dominant defensive players in NFL history. And now you're adding him to a defense that already has, you know, a pretty good pass rusher in Byron Young. So, yeah, it elevates the Rams in a pretty substantial way if he's out there for the duration of the season.
I do think the Browns did well. I mean, I think you get a two-time Pro Bowl, 25-year-old defensive end. You get pretty good draft equity. Like, if you're going to get rid of Myles Garrett, who is 31 or is turning 31 this season, like, I don't know how much better you could have done. I would rather have Jared Verse than another late-round first pick. I'd rather have the bird in hand than the bird in the bush, right?
Yeah.
I was talking to Nick about this. What do you think Jared Verse goes for on, like, an open market if the Rams are just like, hey, he's available, any team, give us an offer? As a 25-year-old two-time Pro Bowler with 3 years left, if they pick up that option, 3 years left on his contract?
Yeah. You, like, you might be able to get two firsts from a contender.
Yeah, I'm going to say multiple.
First and a second? Yeah, yeah, maybe. Yeah. So add that into the draft compensation. I think the Browns did well.
He's also going to get $40 million when he's paid, if not more. Yeah.
Well, let's get to the Chris Greer stuff. So this is another thing that I'll rely on you guys for, because the Lions have multiple GMs now. John Dorsey, who many are apparently saying should just be the GM of the Lions all of a sudden out of nowhere, which makes no sense in our chat. Shout out to our chat. And then Chris Greer, who is now he's the player personnel executive, I think, is the role that he's in currently. Can you guys just kind of break down what that role looks like and what Chris Greer brings to the table? I know there's a maybe a crossing of paths between Dan Campbell and Chris Greer, more Mike Tannenbaum. That was kind of that time where he was an interim head coach, Dan Campbell. But can you guys kind of break down what his role is going to be with the Detroit Lions moving forward?
You know, I don't think we know yet, but just the way it's described, I think it's going to be similar to John Dorsey, right? It's going to be another voice, another evaluating set of eyes in the process. And, you know, I don't really understand the, oh, he was a terrible GM, so he's going to be terrible in this role. Like, that's such a shallow way of thinking, right? It's like saying Vic Fangio can't be a great defensive coordinator because he failed as a head coach, right? Like, and failed might even be harsh for Greer. He just was average, right? Like, I think he had a 500 record, you know, a few playoff appearances, a pretty nice array of draft hits over his decade in the role. Built, I think, one of the most interesting and compelling offenses we've seen in the league in quite some time that, you know, just burned out as fast as it hit with that 23 offense that was number one in the NFL, super explosive, ton of speed, very fun to watch. I don't think you can have too many sets of experienced eyes in the draft process. I think great leaders surround themselves with people that bring fresh ideas that will challenge them, will challenge their way of thinking. And so you really just add another one of those to the room, particularly from the college scouting process. And look, I don't think John Dorsey was very popular in Cleveland or Kansas City, right? Like, he wasn't a great GM either, but it just gives another voice for Brad Holmes to lean on to see something maybe he doesn't see in the draft process. I don't know what Chris Greer's expertise is. All these scouts have like a position that they know better than anybody else, right? Like maybe Chris Greer understands cornerback play better than Brad Holmes does, or safety or running back or whatever it is. But like, there's always going to be immense value, I think, in adding somebody with his caliber of experience. And it is a deep, deep resume that includes 10 years of the GM. Yeah. And I just think that's extraordinarily valuable.
Yeah, dude, first of all, shout out the Greer family. I wasn't aware of the connection between Chris Greer and Mike Greer until I saw a picture of Chris Greer yesterday, and I was like, that's got to be Mike Greer's brother. They are identical. Sure shit. Yeah, Mike Greer, who was a longtime NHLer and one of the first great black players in the NHL, and now the first black GM in the NHL, the GM of the Sharks, is the brother of Chris Greer, who is a, you know, accomplished in his own right NFL executive. So I don't know, shout out the Greers, and their dad was obviously raising them right. Shout out journalism. Turns out Chris Greer's major at UMass Amherst was journalism. So big win for all of us here in that regard. Speaking of appeasing, this felt like appeasing the fans who wanted the Lions to hire Mike McDaniel as OC. Instead of hiring McDaniel, they hired the man who hired McDaniel in Miami and said, hey, is this good enough? But I think the history that Chris Greer has with Parcells, dating back to his time with the Patriots, obviously appeals to Dan Campbell. Dan Campbell values anyone who has been around Bill Parcells sort of in any capacity. And, you know, I think we talked a lot during the Petsing hire and the OC search process about the Lions looking for minds, football brains who have been exposed to a lot of different approaches, philosophies, a lot of different great coaches. And certainly that's something you can say for Chris Greer. I mentioned Parcells. He also has been around Pete Carroll for a long time with the Patriots. He was around even Saban when Saban was briefly the head coach of the Dolphins earlier in Greer's tenure in Miami. So you're getting a guy who has just been exposed to some of the great minds in football, and that can only help a front office. I think it's kind of funny here that Chris Greer was directly responsible for the first like explosive Brad Holmes war room draft moment when the Dolphins selected Jalen Waddle sixth overall in 2021. And we saw the Lions react knowing that they would get Penei Sewell seventh overall pick later. Yeah. We saw Brad sort of reveal himself for the first time on draft night. But like, I think if Ray Agnew ends up departing anytime soon, obviously currently the Lions assistant GM who interviewed for the Vikings GM role this offseason didn't get it, but made it pretty clear to us last week that that's still sort of his end goal. You know, like his big ambition is to be a GM. Then, you know, they might have a pretty natural replacement for him now in Chris Greer, a long tenured exec who has extensive experience as an amateur scout, much like Ray Agnew. So I still don't know if a GM job is eventually out there for Ray Agnew, but if it is, and if he does depart, well, you've got a guy who can sort of seamlessly step into that role on staff now in Chris Greer.
Yeah, I don't have too many thoughts other than anytime you can bring in another executive that's been a GM, been in your shoes before, I don't think it's a bad thing. And there's a lot of people that seem to think that this is a bad thing. It's probably mostly Dolphins fans. But I would say he's not the GM here. He's not being the final decision maker here. And that's going to be Brad. But I don't think it's a bad thing to have another guy that's been in his shoes and has done the job before as just a sounding board. We've seen it work with John Dorsey. So I don't think adding another guy is a bad thing. And those guys have a relationship, Brad and Chris Greer here. I was reading a story, Eric Whittier, our colleague at ESPN on the beat. He wrote a story about just how Brad has worked behind the scenes to strengthen the pipeline for future Black GMs and creating opportunities. And he quoted Greer in his story last year. And he said, Brad, first of all, is a tremendous person. That's how he's always carried himself from literally when he was an area scout, when we met years ago on the road. He's such a presence because he's such a good person with his work ethic and how he works. He treats everyone like he's known you for years. And to have that kind of skill is underrated because everything in the sport is a relationship business. And he's fantastic at creating relationships with people. And it helps him get information and find out about people and get to know people. And, you know, hearing that from, you know, fellow GM, I think it speaks volumes to how Brad approached the job. And it kind of speaks to what we know about Brad and, you know, how detailed he is in who the person is that he's drafting. That side of it, I think that's one of his strengths as a GM is finding out what these guys are made of, how they tick, how they're wired. Because the talent stuff is easy. You know, I know the whole height, weight, speed stuff was crossed out on those hoodies a couple years ago, but I do think like nowadays anyone has access to that information. So it is about building those relationships. So to hear a guy like Chris Greer kind of preach that about Brad speaks to their relationship and how they might work together here in Detroit. So don't see a bad side to this. I don't know why people on Twitter were freaking out this morning, but I guess again something to talk about in June 3rd.
That's right.
Hey, yeah. Will, you made sure to shout out Dad with the Greer family. Yeah. I think it's really important to know Bobby Greer, born in Detroit.
Let's go.
Played running back at Iowa. Always nice. Good. I think he actually played for Ference. You know, even though it was like 60 years ago. Yeah. Got his head coaching start at Waterford Kettering and Martin Luther King High School in Michigan. And then, you know, went on to a really long career as a coach and a personnel executive in the NFL. But notably, I think on that front is he was in that Charlie Kastler Casserly tree down there in Houston when they started. And if you know anything about the Lions front office, Brian Hudspeth, college scouting director, Rob Lohman, pro personnel director, both came up in that tree. And when I talked to Hudspeth in February at the Combine, he actually mentioned Bobby Greer as a really important mentor and role model. So it doesn't mean that's why Chris Greer is here, but I always find those connections to be super interesting.
Well, let me get to prize picks, and I will give away my picks for the Lions season. So we'll start. By the way, shout out to Prize Picks. As always, you can use the code HMA, get $5. You play $5, you get $50 instantly in your lineups. And today, let's go through it. So as you can see over here, we got two for the Lions on the season. We're going over in the new offense with Drew Petzing. Passing touchdowns for Jared Goff, 27 and a half. He's had 30 plus multiple times with the Detroit Lions. We're running this thing back. Give me more with Isaac Tesla and Ross St. Brown. You got Jameson Williams, a healthy Sam Laporta. In this offense, I'll take it. Easy schedule. Jahmyr Gibbs, I'm going to go more. 1,199 and a half. So we're going 1,200 for Jahmyr Gibbs on the ground. And this offense, again, with the Drew Petzing offense, better offensive line. You can copy these picks and tail my picks, or you can do your own lineups. But again, use that code HMA and get or play $5, get $50 instantly in your lineups. Let's get back to the show, kind of close it out here. And I do want to mention Dog and Pony Show Brewing, and we'll tie this to what our next segment is, Lions Bold Predictions. Our dog and pony pick of the week, but we're going to do our dog and pony bold predictions of the week, or at least for the season for the Detroit Lions. So let's hear it, fellas. Anything that's been on your mind that you got to get off your chest here?
Let me start because I got to bounce here in a few. First of all, so this is kind of a spin on Connor Orr, who's a longtime SI NFL writer. He writes a column each year, 100 days out from the season, on 100 bold predictions. And it was just released a couple of days ago, maybe yesterday, and it was actually pretty glowing of the Lions. He had the Lions, I think, leading the NFL in wins this season, finishing first in points, and was very optimistic about their path forward this year. But my bold prediction, I got two of them, to the Lions this season. Jared Goff finished second in the NFL in passing yards last year to Matthew Stafford. He finished second in the NFL in passing yards in 2024 to Joe Burrow. He finished second in the NFL in passing yards in 2023 to Tua. This is the year that he will finish first in the NFL in passing yards for the first time in his career. And I think in conjunction, the Lions will finish first for the second year in a row in yards after catch as an offense. Like, I don't know if there is a player on this roster who's going to play a lot on offense that isn't a legitimate threat with the ball in his hands after the catch, from St. Brown to J-Mo to a healthy Sam Laporta, you hope, this year, to Greg Dortch, to Jahmyr
Kendrick Hill. Law.
Kendrick Law, man, throw him out there too. Like, they're just going to be racking up yards with the ball in their hands after the catch. So I think this is the year that Goff breaks through as the NFL's passing leader, also playing against, as Jeff noted, a pretty cushy schedule. And then on the defensive side of the ball, I have Aleem McNeil setting a new career high in sacks. His previous high was five in 2023. I think he breaks that this year. And to take it a bolder step further, I'll say that Aleem McNeil finishes among the top five in defensive tackles in sacks this season. And I think that number last year, the top five cutoff, was around seven or seven and a half. I think Aleem McNeil can reach that number this year. It was pretty encouraging to hear him talk after the OTA session last week, just about feeling like himself again. He said the biggest hurdle last year was just trying to connect his body and his brain, like allowing his leg to trust what his brain wanted him to do. He knew what he wanted to do. He had done it before. Like, he just wanted to burst off the ball, to bulldoze guards and centers, to bend around the edge when he needed to. But his brain just couldn't send that message to that, you know, still recovering knee. But he said that's gone now. And I think this year he's going to bounce back in a big way. So I got Aleem McNeil top five among defensive tackles and sacks this season.
Colton, did you also have Aleem McNeil a new career high in sacks?
I had a Lee McNeil on my list, but that was not what it was. So if you want to go somewhere else with it, you can.
No. I had that as well. It's really, really funny. I thought we were going to all three be on the same page.
That was slightly different. I was just going to say my bold one was Aleem getting an All-Pro honor, whether it's first or second team.
That's bold.
Which
I like it.
You know, you look at his 2024 season, the year that he was having before he got hurt, I think he was going to be a Pro Bowler.
Yeah.
So if he's able to pick up where he left off there and a full year removed from that injury and change, you know, I think he can get back on that track. And just to make it a little bit more bold, I'd say All-Pro instead of Pro Bowl.
Hell yeah. So that was my.
I feel like bold from Will would have been Jared Goff MVP. I'm a little.
It would have been Sione Vaki leading the team in rushing yards.
Yeah, that was your bold prediction for the offseason right there. All right. I've lost a few here. Connor Orr sniped me on the scoring average as well. So we're going to go Jahmyr Gibbs. No David Montgomery. Not a ton of faith in Vaki that matches Will or
Hater.
Even Pacheco. So we got previous career high, 1,929 yards from scrimmage. We're going to go 2,200 yards from scrimmage this year. Jeez. For one Jahmyr Gibbs. Included in that, 1,500 rushing yards.
Okay. I was going to say, can you flirt with a 1K season?
Yeah.
You want to give him 1K?
That's bold.
I don't see
it happening.
That's a little rich.
Mouse to be in this office.
Yeah, that's a little rich for me, but
we're talking bold, right?
My other one, I think Keith Abney will be the starter at nickel out of the bye.
Nice. Okay. What you got, Jeff?
So, I'm gonna go with the rookie. I'm gonna rock with the rookie here. I'm going Keith Abney starts week one at nickel and never loses it. That's what I think he has a Brian Branch type of kind of like, hey, this guy's too good. He's got to play and where he's going to start week one. Roger McCreary, I love you. Got a lot of respect for you, my friend. But Keith Abney, okay, remember the name. Buy the jersey, and he's going to take it over. So I'll go with the rookie. I think Keith Abney takes that spot week one and doesn't give it back. We'll go with him.
No, nothing with Luke Altmaier? He looked pretty good that first practice.
You know what, Justin? Don't make me do this, okay? Don't make me – Luke Altmaier. No, I'm just kidding. No Luke Altmaier, not yet. Not yet. My Hendon Hooker take died a while ago. We don't got to revive that, all right? We're with die. I think I'm scared.
No pajama party hype.
Yeah. That'll do it for today, fellas. Great show. Everyone that's watching, by the way, hit the like button on the stream. Subscribe if you haven't already. We're live every single Wednesday. It's the off season. We got some things planned. We'll keep you guys updated with that.
Yeah,
we'll be at Dog and Pony Show Brewing after the show. So come hang out with us.
And we also have we got some player interviews lined up for the pod over the next couple of months before training camp. I'm going to try and introduce you guys to newcomers to the roster, whether it's veterans like McCreary and Izian or draft picks like Abney and others. So no actual names confirmed yet, but we do have those in the works. So stick around for that. We might not have as many episodes in June and July, but hopefully those player interviews can help bridge the gap. So if you guys have any, if you have any requests on players you might want to hear from, newcomers, let us know and we'll try and get those guys to join, and maybe you guys can pitch in some questions of your own.
Yeah, let's just I'll start with Roger McCreary first interview, and I'm just talking about his job being snatched. I mean, it's just let's just everyone in the chat, don't bring this up, please. We have Roger McCreary on.
Jeff goes, hey, Roger, tell me how good Keith Abney is.
All right, we'll catch you guys next week. As always, until then, peace.